third case of the day, Kasten v. St. Gobain.
Yes.
Mr. Kaster, you may take your drink of water, Mr. Kasker. I did not want to interrupt your movement there.
Test it for gin content while you're doing it.
Jim Kaster appearing for the appellant, Kevin Kasten. Kevin Kasten went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to establish that oral complaints are covered under 215A3, resolving an important legal question dividing the circuits, only to be reversed and dismissed on the most basic fact question that there could be, causation. That decision by the trial court before Kevin Kasten ever set foot into court was error because of this very compelling evidence. First of all, in the very meeting where Kevin Kasten's fate was decided on December 6th of 2006, he raised the issue that the time clock location was illegal. He raised that in the very meeting. The notes of the meeting reflect that he did that. He went on, according to his testimony, to say if they were brought to court, they would lose. And he was thinking about doing exactly that.
So I am assuming, actually, as I recall, his testimony is that he refers to the illegality. He says, I said.
He does say that.
So he's a direct witness to the fact that he said that.
He does say that, but there are...
Minutes corroborate his account of what he said.
An email that is contained at the appendix at page 28, Your Honor, confirms that he raised the illegality in the very meeting where his fate was decided on December 6th. Beyond that, we have the most direct evidence you could possibly have. In the appendix at page 142, Dennis Brown, the HR manager, admits in response to a cross-examination question that they discussed the fact that he raised the illegality in the discussion about his termination, in the very discussion that was had about whether he should be terminated. They discussed the fact that he raised the illegality. The court talks about that in the framework of they talked about the location being inconvenient. That's not what the admission is. The admission is that they discussed the complaint that it was in an illegal location. Dennis Wolverton.
Can I turn your attention to a slightly different point?
Sure.
We have two policies in play here, right? We have the attendance policy and then this corrective action policy. And one of the things you argue is that the company's explanations for what it did shifted over time. But I want to know, for even the corrective action policy, whether this always gets triggered per time punch or whether sometimes two or three punches are grouped together, and how do we know what it's going to be?
Well, we don't. We know that in January of 2006, Kevin Kasten was given his first warning for several Kronos violations.
And
we have
an
affidavit.
A single warning that corresponded to several
warnings. And it's actually a warning that was given in February, but the Kronos violations were apparently in January. We know at the appendix at 115, we have an affidavit from an employee in the very year, a similarly situated employee, who had seven Kronos violations and was given a positive employment review and was not terminated. So we have comparators under the indirect method of proof. But beyond that, we have this very direct evidence, the discussion of the illegality complaint at the time they terminated him. Dennis Wolverton pulls him aside, his supervisor, immediately before the final meeting and says, Kevin, if you just roll over and tell them what they want to hear, you will be able to save your job. Instead, he goes into the meeting and he tells them that the location of the time clocks is illegal, and then he gets terminated.
The district court found that statement to be ambiguous enough as to be not helpful either way.
The court said she was unpersuaded by the statement and that it was vague. I think that's an issue for the finder of fact. I don't know what is vague about that statement. Kevin Kasten is, first of all, under the attendance policy, an explanation is specifically considered. In the appendix at page 51, the court will find a handwritten note from Kevin Kasten that is specifically called for under the attendance policy. It is beyond dispute that under the attendance policy, Kevin Kasten should not have been terminated. So it, and
that's
Kevin
the one that
Kasten
accumulates
was,
points.
And he would have been given half points for each of the violations during that year. In addition, under the attendance policy, as of the third violation, a person is given a one-day suspension. Kevin Kasten was given a one-day suspension. The company's first explanation for the termination that the attendance policy governed was right. It did govern, and it is beyond dispute that he did not deserve termination under that policy. In any case, I see I've used up my 5 minutes, and I will.
You're in your rebuttal. You had reserved.
I reserve five. I'll wait and respond in rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kasten. Mr. Godar.
May it please the court, I'm Thomas Godar and represent the defendant appellee, Saint-Gobain Performance Products Corporation. And in this case, we have a parallel to a couple of cases this court has already decided. One recent case with an almost unpronounceable name, which is the Arizona OVSCA versus Walmart case. And in that case, there was a document, at the same time a layoff, which was the adverse action. And in that document, it referred to the fact that the plaintiff had filed an EEOC action. That, however,
could I back up, though? I mean, when the company, I don't mean necessarily, although I gather you were involved, but when the company terminated him, it cites the attendance policy and, in fact, even attaches a copy of the attendance policy when this goes to the Wisconsin.
I think, Your Honor, there may be some confusion because, in fact, the February discipline, the August discipline, the November discipline, and ultimately the termination on the four-step phase of progressive discipline only related
well,
to
that's what
the
you're now saying. I understand that. And I have questions about actually the fundamental flexibility. Sometimes there are disputed issues of fact about what the content of a policy actually is. And as I look at this record, sometimes Mr. Kasten gets one event, you know, a verbal counseling on February 13, 2006 for several Kronos issues. And then we get up to November of 2006, and each missed punch is treated as a separate event for the progressive discipline process. And if there's discretion, then the question is, why is the discretion being exercised negatively as he's making these complaints about the illegality of the company's policies for Fair Labor Standards purposes?
Well, for Mr. Kasten to prevail in his retaliation claim, he's going to have to show that comparators were treated differently.
Well, he has to show, and we have to take at this stage of the game, that he complains about the illegality of the donning and doffing time. He testifies squarely to that. His testimony is competent. We have to accept that. And he has to show that he is treated less favorably somehow, that his complaints caused his termination. And I'm saying if the content of the policy itself is debatable, that might require resolution by a trier of fact.
Two points, Judge, and thank you for pointing that out. First, it was consistent by the decision makers, even though there might have been a mistake in a later explanation by counsel
why?
He was terminated under the time clock policy.
But if the time clock policy itself sometimes groups punch problems, Kronos issues, as you guys seem to call them, and sometimes is one by one, then it's of course much more favorable to the employee to have a single event under the progressive discipline for three issues than issue by issue, because you'd get fired right away with four.
And you'll see in 2006, in the record that's before the court will reflect this, that there were some problems with the lenience with which supervisors were granting employees to have these Kronos violations. There was an audit that took place in the spring and into early summer of 2006. And as a result of that audit, Mr. Kasten and others were having a tightening of that policy. But it's Mr. Kasten and others.
Sure.
All of them were treated the same way, Your Honor.
Well, that would be your argument. But I note on May 18, 2006, Sean McCune gets a performance review indicating that he seven times forgot to clock in or clock out. Joyce Montefell, four times. Then Mr. Kasten gets a written warning for several. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me the record could support what you're saying, but it could support what he's saying.
And I appreciate the question, but I believe that the record is quite clear that Mr. McCune, for instance, was terminated only several weeks later after Mr. Kasten. Ms. Montefell received the same kind of step-by-step warnings that Mr. Kasten received. Received those warnings through the progressive discipline policy, and Mr. Kasten, like Ms. Montefell and Mr. McCune, had in that early part of 2006, up until the late summer, multiple violations, but all of the employees were treated similarly as comparators. After that, Mr. McCune, Ms. Montefell, and eight other employees, who were all terminated, or nine, based on this Kronos time clock policy, did not complain about their about some sort of treatment under the FLSA. And in this case, indeed, Mr. Kasten was absolutely aware that the result of his final failure to punch in was going to be termination.
Well, I'm sure you sincerely believe all of this, but I'm trying to take the record in the light most favorable to Mr. Kasten, because it's not either the district court's job or our job to decide who should win. It's our job to decide who should win. That's actually really important in a regime where there's a right to a jury trial. So I'm concerned that looking at the record most favorably to him, you could see the frequency and severity of the discipline increasing, and maybe this audit has nothing to do with it. Maybe a jury wouldn't believe that.
But you have to have more than whether or not a jury might believe this, I believe. In both Kishon, it said, by relying on the hope that the jury will not trust the credibility of defendants' witnesses, that couldn't raise an inference. And more recently,
but we have Mr. Kasten's testimony. We don't have a situation where somebody just comes in and says, everybody else is lying. We understand that.
But Mr. Brown, who was the decision maker, was absolutely clear. The termination documents were absolutely clear. And Mr. Kasten was absolutely clear in understanding that he would be terminated because of his fourth violation. He asked for a potluck to his lead person coworker because he knew when he failed to clock out or clock in on
Well, he
November
may have thought
28th.
They were going to fire him because he was complaining about the Fair Labor Standards Act, too. I don't know why he said that.
That may be, but in fact, the decision maker had never heard about his problem with the Fair Labor Standards Act until the December 6th meeting. That was Mr. Brown.
Well, but they're all talking together, Brown and Wolverton and Riley and, bunch of them are talking together.
And I understand that at various times the employer was concerned about acting in a manner that was appropriate.
And
of
the employer was also
be.
Concerned about the Fair Labor Standards Act.
And of course they should be. Every employer ought to be. That can't be the basis for some sort of inference, and it's certainly not direct evidence, that Mr. Kasten was retaliated against. All employers should be able to talk about whether or not they're acting within
Absolutely.
A responsible legal matter, Your
The
Honor.
Issue here is whether Saint-Gobain began applying this missed punch rule, whether it was an attendance rule, whether it was a corrective action rule, more strictly inside the discretion after he made, and we have to assume he made the protected complaints. You cannot run away from that. Right now.
Obviously, and I won't go into this.
You
we
can't.
Believe that this court has the opportunity to rule otherwise. But
we can't, because we have to take it's his direct testimony, it's competent testimony. He makes protected complaints.
And within that context, you can also look, and you have to look at the evidence, not mere inference from the circumstantial evidence, that they did act consistently following this audit, following the opportunity for other employees, and there were 9 other employees terminated under this policy, there is no evidence that Mr. Kasten was treated differently. He knew
it's
about the consequence.
It's the policy itself that's very unclear, given the way the company shifts its application of it.
I believe that Mr. Brown, the HR manager at that time, indicated that it was always a consequence that after the fourth discipline following this same type of behavior within a 12-month period, individuals would be terminated. Mr. Kasten had no doubt about that, and that's precisely what happened to Art Bredesen, who worked next to him on the same shift.
Right,
same,
but if each violation represents 3 failures to punch for one person, so that there are 12 missteps, and each violation for Mr. Kasten, I'm going to exaggerate, is just 1, then there's no equivalence.
But in this case, and that would be true, but in this case, there's a consistency of treatment of all of the comparators. Early in the year, before the audit said that we have really made a mistake by being so lenient, it puts the supervisors in such a hard position, there was a greater allowance of multiple punches. But you'll find no evidence in the record, I believe, Your Honor, that following that time, for instance, the
May
evaluation.
What day was the audit finished?
Pardon me?
What day was the audit finished?
The audit, I do not have a precise day, Your Honor. I believe that it was finished sometime in June or
All
July.
Right.
It
so
talked about the summer.
On August 31st, 2006, he gets a written warning for several Kronos issues in July and August.
And that,
so
of course,
there's several issues after the audit's finished.
And that, of course, is in fairness to the employee because the audit was finished and this new policy was now being rolled out. And that was the same thing. There's no comparator that did not get treated the same way.
I don't know why that's not a jury argument, really.
Your Honor, I don't believe, and I appreciate your questions, but I don't believe it gives rise to an inference, certainly, of direct evidence of retaliation. And there is no evidence that there was pretext in the decision to terminate Mr. Kasten. He knew exactly why. And for that reason alone, the decision of the district court ought to be affirmed. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Goodner. Mr. Kaster.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just going to the attendance policy itself, Your Honor, it's very clear on this record that it was the attendance policy that governed their behavior at the time. If you look at the appendix at page 1, the court will see that the employee may prepare a note stating what their behavior is that they are going to change. Then the court will find the note under the attendance policy, appendix at page 51, the note itself. What's incredible about this single Kronos violation, first of all, when they moved the time clocks on December 11th of 2006, they told all the employees, we're moving the time clocks. They didn't tell them they were moving them to be in compliance with the FLSA. They told them they were moving them because there were so many Kronos violations. So that's so this was apparently a rampant problem. The two comparators were eventually terminated or left their jobs, but I'm just looking in the record. I think they were left or were terminated for other unrelated reasons. The timing in this case is incredible. I mean, we have the supervisor and the admission that the supervisor pulls him aside before the final meeting and says, just roll over and tell them what you want to hear. He goes into the meeting. It is beyond dispute that he makes protected complaints in the meeting, and then they decide to terminate him. There is very compelling facts. First of all, and the explanation that he gives of this final violation in late November is, I think, extremely compelling. He goes back early from lunch. He's back early from lunch, 6 minutes. He's a troubleshooter. Some other employee is in distress and needs help. He goes and helps that person. Then he self-reports the violation. Under the attendance policy, he can use personal time, give up personal time, instead of suffer a Kronos violation. He offers to do that. They reject all of that, and they reject his explanation. I think those findings, in addition to the direct evidence, and I'm not clear, Your Honor, about why the trial court found the evidence undeveloped and unpersuasive. This is very compelling direct evidence. I know that timing alone is typically not enough, but we have incredibly compelling timing here, where at the exact moment they decide to terminate him, he makes a protected complaint. The court also, and I'm not sure that the trial court says She calls the direct evidence of the discussion by Dennis Brown the discussion of an excuse. She says that there was a discussion of the reason why Kevin missed, and of course there would be, as a logical reason. That's not the admission. The admission that was made by Dennis Brown is that they discussed the fact that Kevin raised the illegality in the discussion to terminate him. That was the admission. And that as is, and that's the appendix at page 142. That's as direct and compelling of evidence as there could be. She also says we don't explain why the concern over FLSA compliance would cause the employer to terminate Kevin Kasten. The company knew they were violating the law for over a year. That's what the record shows. In September of 2006, there's an email that says, we need to move the clocks to be in compliance with the FLSA. Still, in December, they still hadn't moved the clocks. They still hadn't done that. Kevin Kasten announced to everybody in the last 60 days of his employment, to the HR supervisor, manager, to his lead, to his supervisor, to anybody in the hallways, according to his testimony, that the company was violating the law with the location of the time clocks. Despite all of that, his performance reviews were excellent. He received raises and promotions. The only trouble he was causing them was he was making protected complaints. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goddard. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the